Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Cage Wisdom MMA. My name is Josh, and I am your host, along with Buck Slurf over MMA Nerd.
Greetings, fellow Spartans. You guys get it? Because of 300?
I don't get it.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no, I still don't get it.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. No, don't worry about it.
Okay, so anyway, you know, it's like 10 o'clock at night right now, so we're going to jump right into this. But
let's go.
UFC 300, I don't know if you've heard much about it.
I've heard it's a big deal.
It is one hell of a card. It is, we say this a lot, I say the word amazing, even the software I use to determine which words I'm using too much says I say the words amazing too much, but this is a fucking killer card. Top to bottom. You know, we don't have a whole lot of like highlights what's going on in the UFC right now to go over, but you know, I'm going to turn over to you. You've got a couple of fights that you at least wanted to just high level touch base on the undercard before we get into the main card.
I do. And again,
talk
like
to us.
This is a bounty of riches. The last three cards, especially with this one at the very end, top to bottom, this is one of those cards that I'm going to be sitting at a bar for like 8 straight hours. Because I don't want anybody to take my seat. The very first fight of the night, the curtain jerker, is Cody Garbrandt versus Davison Figueiredo at bantamweight.
Dude, that should be a main card fight.
That could headline a pay per view. That's an insane fight. That's so much fun.
Yeah,
we've talked about the tarantula. Oh God, I'm already blanking on his name. He's fighting. Hanato Moicano, Jalen Turner.
Interesting to remember Hanato Moicano.
I was just listening to a podcast where he said motherfuck like 6 times and stuck in my head.
Okay.
Jim Miller is fighting Bobby Green. This will be,
yep. That's a great fight.
And then a real cool point, Jim Miller will be now the only fighter who's fought on UFC 100, 200, and 300.
Wow.
Before him, I think.
And I still like watching him fight.
Yeah, he's great.
He's still fun to watch fight.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't gone the way, and this is going to sound bad, but like the Clay Guidas of the world where, you know, last couple fights, like, you know, should you be here? I mean, you can hang, but should you?
Yeah.
Jim Miller still seems to see like he has got a definite spot.
He's still cleaning up.
Is he going to retire soon? He's got to be retired.
I think he was just doing it to make it to 300. I would not be surprised if he retires at this event.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Okay. Any other amazing fights? Oh, you wanted to mention the Holly Holm fight.
Yeah, so Kayla Harrison, who was the PFL women's lightweight champion, is now finally coming over to the UFC. She is basically like Mega Rousey. Ronda Rousey was 135 pounds and was a bronze medalist in the Olympics, and Kayla Harrison is 155 pounds and was a gold medalist in judo in the Olympics. Even still, and maybe even because of that, this fight is going to take place at bantamweight, and that's a vicious cut. So I'm only like 60% sure this fight's going to be on the card, because if she makes weight, Holly has said that she's not going to do it, and respect to her. But if she makes it, that's going to be a pretty cool addition. I don't know what they'll do with her, but it could be a cool feather.
She's got personality for days, though.
Yeah, she's fun. I mean, she's cool. She talks her game. She trains at American Top Team with Poirier and formerly Nunes and those guys over there. She would be fun if she can reliably make 135, but that just seems like a really tall order.
Yeah, because she's not holding a lot of extra weight. She's just kind of thick, you know?
No, she's a...
I mean, she's buff.
There's a built...
She's buff.
Built woman.
She's really well. We got big legs and stuff on her. I think that's a massive weight cut.
Yeah.
And I agree with Holly Holm, but, you know, that doesn't really set her up for success coming over and having to make that big of a weight cut. Neither here nor there.
Interesting if it happens. Yeah. And then the last one I wanted to talk about that I am actually really excited for is Aljo coming up to 145. He's fighting Calvin Kattar.
What did you call him?
Aljo? Aljamain Sterling. Sorry.
No, what was the weight thing that you called him?
Going up to featherweight?
Yeah. Oh, did I mishear something?
No, I.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Isn't he featherweight now?
Yeah, but you was his nickname.
Aljo, the Funk Master.
Okay, I misheard you on something else. Let's just move on.
All right, please. he is, I think, probably going to be like the best submission artist at featherweight now, like tied with or maybe just behind Ortega in terms of like danger on the ground. I don't think anybody at featherweight hunts the back like he does. I think that's a lot more common down at bantamweight. So I'm very excited to see if he keeps his speed. He's going to be a little bit smaller, even though he was a big 135er. He'll be a lot shorter than Cater, but I still think it'll be fun to watch him scramble and see what he can do in the 145.
Cater's a tough out, too.
He is. Cater hasn't fought a ton of wrestlers, though. The only one I would say is, I guess he fought Zabit Magomedsharipov a couple of years ago, but even he was more of a striker who could grapple.
I really miss that guy.
Yeah, I know.
Zabit.
It's so selfish of him to quit the sport and become a doctor.
I know, right? Trying to make the world a better place.
What about violence?
Get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just an ego move. Well, he had like an autoimmune disorder too. That's what kicked it off.
Oh, okay.
And then then he wanted to go in. Yeah. And I guess that inspired him and he wanted to become a doctor. I'm like, dude.
I'm not happy about it, but I'll
use your fist, not your brain. That's what we learned. Yeah. Maybe it was the other way around. I'm not sure. All right. So UFC 300, if you thought the undercard was good, and it is good. Wait until you hear the main card. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, I really hope that you know what the main card is, but I'm going to run down it because the way that we do this here is we assess each and every main card fight, make our predictions. Now, we are not a betting platform, but we do use the odds to kind of help frame the conversation, frame the argument for or against. And by the way, you know, a little feather in our cap, we were 4-1 on UFC 299, with the one being a last second knee that took out, what's his name?
Gilbert Burns.
Well, yeah, so we were damn near 5-0, and that was with three underdogs on it.
That was that one was pretty tough. I think actually,
yeah, it was tough to swallow,
dude. And
you're right. I think you picked one too that I.
I think against, I picked. But... Neil Magny to lose against some guy that I don't need to worry about anymore. Mike Malott. Was that the 299? Is that 299?
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Oh, well then, forget.
I don't remember.
Forget I said
it
that.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. We weren't prepared to talk about that.
I actually got them all right, actually, now that I'm remembering
we
it.
We are prepared to talk about the next five, though.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one, I'll just run them all down real quick. And I'll give you the odds. So Bo Nickel, -1400 at middleweight.
Huge.
Taking on Cody Brundage, +1200. Very great, entertaining odds. Charles Oliveira, +180 at lightweight. Taking on Armand Sarukian, -218. Justin Gaethje, -180 at lightweight. Taking on Max Holloway. It's going to be a great fight, +150. Wei Li Zhang, -500 at strawweight. Taking on Zhao Nao. Say it.
Zhao Nan Yan.
Man, I butcher those names so hard. At +380. No disrespect. It's just not my native tongue. And then Alex Pereira, or Pajeda, -130 at light heavyweight, taking on Jamal Hill, +110, which I think is going to be, depending on how Hill comes back from that Achilles.
Yeah, that's big.
Injury, is going to be really interesting to see how that one goes down. So first fight that we're going to go over, Bo Nickel. -1400, taking on Cody Brundage, +1200. Bo Nickel, he's 20 years old, 5-0. Big, was he a 2- or 3-time All-American at Penn State?
Three-time
All-American. One of the best wrestlers to ever come out of NCAA, and he has been putting on an absolute clinic. He does not have a single fight lasting more than 3 minutes. He's a rising star. He's a little bit of a can crusher right now, but I think he's got the skill set. And taking on Cody Brundage, which I believe, I don't know if you agree, but is definitely a step up in competition from what he's been facing recently. But again, I think this is a showcase fight for Bo Nickel to come in and get another massive pay-per-view opportunity to absolutely put the brakes on Cody Brundage's career.
Yeah, I think he's just going to tool on him for a couple of minutes. I was just going
Everybody
down.
Does. He's minus 1400.
Huge.
So
I was going down his wrestling accomplishments here. I've got a bronze and 3 golds in the Big Ten Championships, a silver, 3 golds in the Division I National Championships, 2 golds at the Under 23 World Championships, and this made me feel pretty good. A Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu blue belt.
Oh, so you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah, pretty. there was only one other 3-time NCAA champion in the UFC, and it was Mark Schultz, who was the subject of the movie Foxcatcher.
Oh,
he fought at UFC 9 one time.
Yeah, that was, I remember him.
Mm-hmm.
That was a heyday.
Let's see.
Not the heyday. That was the beginning.
I'm looking through like why I think Bo is good. It's kind of a rudimentary strategy right now, but it's plenty effective. He does the same thing in every single fight. He is southpaw, and I don't know that he's actually left-handed. But I think just grapplers and wrestlers tend to stand with their right leg forward. So he's probably just used to that. So he starts in a southpaw stance when he's fighting an orthodox fighter. Their lead legs kind of match. And so he's got a ton of distance between him and them. And that's his biggest defense, is just staying really far away. Because he can close the distance really, really fast. And he stays way outside of range, way outside of punching and kicking range, and just feints takedowns over and over and over again. And it's like nuts how deep into a shot he can get and then pull himself out of. Like I've watched him like shoot, his knee hits the mat, his like shoulder hits their hip, and then they, you know, I think this was against Jamie Pickett. He started to, you know, fish for an underhook, and Bo just like immediately popped himself out of it. Like he has so much control all the way through that shot. It's rad.
I agree.
So he,
but I also think,
yeah,
not to stop you, but he can fight in, you know, orthodox southpaw, but I believe his greatest defense is the fact that everyone's so worried about the shot.
That's 100%. Correct.
They keep their hands down, you know, or are they, you know, they're so worried about it that he does a feint, they drop their hands, and that's why he's able to land punches. And because he's a wrestler, because he's spent his entire life grappling, they have the natural power, right? Maybe it's not the best technique, maybe not the best fall through, maybe not the straightest punches, but you look like Dan Henderson, Bo Nickel, all these guys that have really strong wrestling backgrounds. They've got amazing hips.
You could tell. You can teach somebody how to punch with a lot of power. There's a lot of intricacies to striking that take a long time to develop. But you can teach somebody to throw a bomb, especially an athlete like that.
And if you can keep the other guy's hands down because they're so worried about a takedown, it makes things just that much easier.
And sometimes he'll feint the takedown. He'll feint the takedown, and so you don't know if he's gonna shoot a takedown or throw a punch. And then sometimes he does both. At the Contender Series, he shot like an overhand left and a simultaneous knee tap at the same time. And
it's high level.
It's cool stuff to watch.
He's very, very fun to watch, and he's got the personality to back it up. We're supposed to be talking about the fight.
We're not just
Bo Nickel accolades, but you know, my take on it.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. I think Brundage is at least an interesting new opponent is because he will switch stances. And everybody else that he's fought is an orthodox fighter, and there hasn't really been enough time on the feet. Even if they could switch, none of them did. So because Brundage is a wrestler, he'll probably be a little bit more willing, to engage in the grappling and being able to stand southpaw and match bow, he'll be able to be a little bit closer because their legs can cross, their front legs can cross rather than kind of bumping into each other when they're in an open stance.
Yeah.
You know,
no chance.
Yeah. The thing I worry about is like if Brundage tries to like get one over on him and shoots, Bo has a whole instructional on BJJ Fanatics on his front headlock. The front headlock to like go around to take the back is so quick. He has so much control from that position. He gets a snap down, you know, reaches out with his leg to hook his opponent's leg, takes the back, and starts applying the choke or ground and pound.
There's levels to this, and Nickel is one of the greatest to do it, and he's been doing it since he was like 3 years old. And Brundage is, you know, he's got a decent ground game in his own right. I think he might be somewhat willing to engage or not be quite as concerned about the takedowns, and he might try to get close in for really his only shot, which is a Hail Mary blitz and connect on Bo Nickel, but I think that's going to backfire on him. I think he's going to get taken down, and I believe that he is going to get stopped in the first round via submission or ground and pound.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who do you think is a good, like same level challenge or maybe better, like too high level a challenge? Like where should Bo Nickel be? Like
I think
at middleweight, should he fight?
I think Sean Strickland is in his wheelhouse.
Sean Strickland? Okay.
I think Sean Strickland's in his wheelhouse.
Marvin Vettori, maybe?
Yeah. I think he's better than all those guys. But I think he's too rough. I think he's got too many. There's too many things that can go wrong for him right now. But I think, Hamzat is probably a little bit outside of his level right now.
Maybe.
But we'll see in a couple of years, maybe 18 months, where he is just because of the striking.
So Bo would disagree that Hamzat's grappling is too high.
Of course. Like, name one UFC fighter that says, oh, yeah, the other guy's way better than me at this. Like, that almost never happens.
True.
But, you know, I just think it's different. You've got grappling, and then you've got MMA grappling. And Hamzat's a special talent.
Mm-hmm.
He really is, because he puts everything together. I just think that he would be too dangerous to throw in there with Bo Nickel today.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sean Strickland would probably get beat by Bo Nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I think he gets a shot at a really, you know, he won't get it yet because the UFC is really kind of bringing along his career slowly so that he doesn't get starched early on, doesn't get too much because he's still learning, right?
He's 5-0. Only five fights.
He's 5-0. So let's give the guy a little bit of time. He's only 28 years old. But he's got the attitude, just like every other national champion grappler or wrestler, that he can be anybody. And there's a good chance that he actually might be right. But, you know, he gets clipped by one guy in the UFC that could, they could cause a lot of challenges, especially from his marketability standpoint. So throw him in there against maybe a Marvin Vettori.
I'd like to see him fight Kamaru.
Yeah, that would be a good one. And less risky, because of the fact I think Bo Nickel could get that one to the ground a lot faster. And then next one would be, Sean Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
And then the winner of that one goes to fight on Hamzat, and then the winner of that one fights Adesanya. That's, I think, what the path forward is. Four fights to the title. Do you think that's reasonable?
Or Duplessis. But yeah.
Or Duplessis, yeah.
We'll get there, though. That's we'll UFC 306 or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting ahead of
ourselves.
That's
right. Duplessis. My bad. Okay. Yeah. So next fight. So we're both taking Bo Nickel.
By any way he wants.
By any way he wants. Okay. So next one gets a lot harder to pick, and this is Charles Oliveira, who's 34-9, taking on Arman Tsarukyan, who's 21-3, that has looked like, and he's 27, who's looked like a world beater for a while outside of his one loss against Matush Gamrot. I don't even know. How long ago was that?
Maybe 2 years ago. And then his debut in the UFC, he lost to Islam Makhachev.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm just looking at his last like three or four fights.
Yeah, but those are the only two.
But he beat Beneil Dariush, Joaquim Silva, and someone that's not on a lot of people's radar, but is really, really, really good. And this was a close fight, was Demir Ismagulov.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
Demir is a really good fighter. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Now, well, he didn't fight that long ago, but he's very under the radar. He's not good on the mic. Mm. And so he flies under the radar quite a bit. But so Oliveira, what are we at? Plus 180 and then Sarukian minus 218. Give us your thoughts.
I think Oliveira is pretty much always the underdog though, right? Like
he is. Yeah.
He's been the underdog. I think he was the underdog against Dariush even. I think he in his last.
I believe he was.
So that's five fights in a row now. Maybe. Yep. Yeah. So that's nothing new. I think actually Charles has a lot of advantages in this. He's a lot bigger and taller. Mm-hmm. He's like a couple is what I have here. He's 3 inches taller and has an inch and a half of reach. That's pretty significant. Those two things combined.
And he can use it too because he's got really good kickboxing.
Yeah.
And he hits hard.
And he's got a good high guard too. From the standing position, mm-hmm. he keeps his arms all the way up. And I think Sarukian has decent hands.
They've gotten a lot better.
His front kick, like his left leg switch kick to the head is huge for him. And that catches, a lot of people and does a lot of damage. But I don't think it's going to catch Charles because he's got his hands up pretty regularly. You know, what I don't love about Charles on like in terms of his grappling is he seems to be a little too willing to concede bottom position. And Sarukian mm-hmm. just has such good top control. And yeah, Charles is a monster on the ground and he's got submission threats and he can use those to get up. And he was underneath Beneil Dariush and was able to land, elbows and kind of neutralize anything Dariush had. But still, he elects to take guard. He pulls guard a little bit too frequently for me. I don't know if he's going
to
fall.
A lot of time he's not even meaning to pull guard though.
Yeah, I think I remember he did
that against Islam. A lot of time he's getting clipped.
Yeah, that's
against
for sure.
Chandler. He got clipped. Poirier, he got clipped. Did he get clipped by Gaethje too?
Gaethje got him too. But I think
dude, he gets put on his back. Then that's what in my assessment of this fight. Is I think if Sarukian can keep Oliveira on his back foot, because his striking defense, while he does keep a high guard, he's very hittable, mm-hmm. and he gets he gets caught a lot, and but I just don't know if Sarukian has the wherewithal or the striking capability to take advantage of it like a Chandler, Poirier, or Gaethje, mm-hmm. or Islam. All
yeah,
those guys?
I think that in the Islam fight, I know he won by arm triangle, but I think really Islam's counter striking is what made that fight so difficult for, mm-hmm. for Charles. And I just don't know that Sarukian
puts himself
the same,
in a lot of danger I feel like.
Yeah. He does, but I just don't think
Sarukian can capitalize on that though?
I don't. I don't think he can. Not the same way that Charles was or that Islam was able to.
Or Gaethje or Poirier or Chandler.
Yeah, those guys are so
those guys
so
all
good
have
at,
like thunder in their hands.
Yeah. So I think here's where I think it comes down to is I think Charles is better at distance and I think he's better in close. I like his knees and his elbows in the clinch a lot. I think he puts a ton of good pressure against the cage. What always blows my mind about Sarukian, when you go back and watch the Gamrot fight, he'll throw these body kicks, and sometimes they're naked body kicks. Gamrot picks up like four of them. Like he catches those body kicks and tries to like hoist it over his shoulder and treetop him. And Sarukian is just so flexible. I don't think that Charles needs to do that. If he can catch those kicks, which I do think he can, with his reach advantage. I think Charles can catch one of those kicks and just blast him with like a big left hook while Sarukian's stuck on one leg. I think that's going to be a lot more successful than trying to like hoist that thing all the way up over his head when Sarukian's just showed so much balance, so much flexibility.
Yeah. I just don't think, you know, because it's a 3-round fight. Mm-hmm. If Sarukian, because of his aggression, his conditioning, and his wrestling, and, you know, his scrambling ability. So if he's able to get Oliveira down, I'm worried that he can take 2 rounds. I don't think he's going to submit Oliveira. I don't think he's going to knock Oliveira out. But I do think there's a very real chance that he can hold down Oliveira because Oliveira is comfortable on his back. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's got the scrambling capability that Armand does. So it basically comes down to, can Oliveira stay on the feet? Can he piece him up? Can he maintain the distance? Can he not get taken down? Can he get back up if he gets taken down? And for Sarukian is, you know, can he avoid the submission? Can he avoid the strikes? And if he gets him down, can he keep him down?
Yeah.
Those are the paths to victory for each of these guys.
What other, from that caught kick, Armand blasts the body kick. Oliveira wraps it up. Is there anything to like, it seems to me like because Sarukian is so good at scrambling, he's so good at transitioning on the ground. Like the only way that I would want Charles to initiate a grappling exchange is if it's like in a way that he is 100% confident that he can start a grappling exchange where he wants. Is there anything to him catching that body kick and pulling single leg X?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I think he's going to try and blast him. I don't think he wants this to go to the ground. Yeah, I think he should too, because that's his best path to victory. But I mean, he's chronically underrated, incredibly. And he went on, what, that 11 fight tear?
Yeah.
Unbeaten.
And he's a lot tougher now too.
He is. And then we look at who he's fought. Beneil Dariush lost or beat him via TKO. Islam Makhachev, where he lost via submission, beat Justin Gaethje, beat Dustin Poirier, beat Michael Chandler. And then Sarukian, his last 4 fights, he beat Beneil Dariush by KO, beat Joaquim Silva via TKO, beat Demir Ismagulov via decision, and lost to Matush Gamrot via unanimous decision.
It's just a tier below, I would say.
Just a tier below, but I'm looking for, I guess, you know, similarities in between the fighters. And there's just not a lot outside of Beneil Dariush, where they both had the TKO. And it's not like Armand Sarukian's young. You know, he's 27 years old. He's 21-3. So it's not like he's an up-and-coming talent that's under the radar. I mean, he's got 24 fights. So I think we get away from the whole the ring management, the, you know, that kind of thing that we talk about on the guys that are like 9-1 coming up looking good. This is a tough one to call, man. This is a really tough one to call. I'm going to make you call it.
I just think that I haven't seen the kind of things that get Oliveira is like the counter striking. And I just haven't seen that out of Sarukian yet. So even though he's got the control, I think the top control point that you were bringing up is a really good one. But I don't see as many ways to victory as I do for Charles. So I'm going to have to go Oliveira by submission. I think lands a big strike on the feet, follows it up with a sub like he did with Gaethje, like he did with Poirier.
Yeah. I mean, all those guys have good ground games. Really good ground games. But maybe not Armand Sarukian.
What do they say? You lose a belt rank every time you get cracked in the head?
Yeah. I mean, my biggest concern is just the scrambling ability. Like, does Charles have the gas tank to be able to hang with a guy like that? And I'm going to say, I agree with your perspective. You know, obviously we didn't talk about this beforehand. I think that Oliveira, just from a 10,000 foot view, has more ways to win. I agree with that. And I think
I'm hearing while a butt.
He's, yeah, that, no, there is no but. I think that I agree with you on that. I think he's got more ways to win. So we're both going to take Oliveira. You're going to take it via submission. I think that he is going to win over the course of the fight. You know, three rounds, I think. Hopefully he doesn't get pinned down for two of them. If he doesn't get pinned down, I have him win this via decision.
All right,
next fight. Speaking of Justin Gaethje, Justin Gaethje taking on Max Holloway at lightweight. And Justin Gaethje in this one is minus 180, Max Holloway plus 150. Now, the age range is right in line. So Gaethje's 35, Holloway's 32. The reason I bring that up is 35 to 37 is when I start to get nervous about fighters. So I always like to bring it up early and often about what their age is when they're going into this, because a year out can make a big difference when someone hits 36, 37, 38, especially with someone that's got, you know, pretty significant age gap below them. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, we just saw that with Volk, didn't we?
We did. Oof. Yep. It's amazing when you look at those stats broken down.
This is one of those fights where I really wish I didn't like Max so much. Because I don't like, it's going to be like, this is a kind of fight where I don't know if I'm even going to be able to enjoy it, because I'm going to be so nervous, because Justin Gaethje beats people in a way that makes me feel very bad for them.
Career changing.
Yeah. That guy just, he packs
Tony Ferguson
thunderous power. Yeah. I mean, he changed Tony Ferguson's life.
He did.
He hits so hard, and he has developed into such a like deceptively technical striker also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is so much like tiny shifts of his weight and his positioning. The things that I like watching him do is, so when I was building this up in my head and I was trying to like break everything down, I thought, well, who beat Max the worst? And it was Volk in their last fight. In their third fight, it was Volk. And he did that with lots of feints and lots of retreats and drawing Max into big counters and things like that. And
speed.
Yeah. And I don't think that Gaethje is going to be able to retreat like Volk does. He doesn't have the same sort of he doesn't have the same style by any means. But he does have similar tools in his leg kicks, which are going to be a huge threat to Max. And what Gaethje does is he enters the pocket, like he will shift to cover a huge amount of distance, enter the pocket with this big overhand that comes from now the opposite side that he was on. And then he doesn't like enter the pocket and then angle out and leave at like, you know, come in at 6 o'clock and angle out at 4 o'clock. What he ends up doing is charging right past his opponent. He'll like come in at 6 o'clock and then strafe them almost and be like sidestepping as he moves past them to land right hook, left hook, and then exit out at almost like 1 o'clock. So comes in at 6 and leaves at 1. He goes past them and like lands hooks as he strafes. It's really interesting. It's this cool thing that I haven't seen any other fighters do, and not any other Trevor Whitman fighters, but this, he does a lot of lateral movement. He'll do it with his jab, like a dipping jab, and he'll, from that dip, which I think he does too much of, but when he's like dipped down after a body jab, he will shuffle laterally from that position in order to put a better angle on his big overhand right. There's a lot of like shifts in angles, but in an even more unorthodox way than other fighters that play with a lot of angles. It's really,
his movements
unique.
Are really big too.
They're big.
And that's, yeah. Like when he goes in and he fires off a combination, a lot of times he leans almost at a 45 degree angle, then comes back with like a left hook or an overhand right. Or he finishes up like a really close leg kick, which is a really impressive thing that he can do. And I don't think people realize how difficult it is to unleash a powerful leg kick when you're basically like in the box with somebody else, which he tends to excel at. So he's risky. You know, he's got good knees. He's got good leg kicks in close. He's got good elbows. He's got good clinch work. But more importantly, maybe not more importantly, but he's almost impossible to kill, this guy.
Dude.
With Gaethje. And so, and that's where the challenge between these two fighters is, right? You know, Max Holloway's come up to 155 before, where he fought Dustin Poirier, and he lost, and he looked like he was undersized in that fight, right? You know, the power was pretty substantial, substantially different between the two fighters, and he was eating a lot of shots, and it really wore on him. Well, take that and multiply that by 20%, and that's what you have in Gaethje. You've got someone that's got, you know, maybe not the best movement, but he's got strange angles. He's got ridiculous power. He's okay fighting at, you know, at distance with his leg kicks. He can cover the distance well. I don't see any chance this is going to go to the ground, because Gaethje likes to slug, and he's a wrestler, and Holloway doesn't necessarily have great takedowns. I mean, he's got great grappling, but he's not a big takedown artist. Would you agree with that?
I think he has.
You think he can take down a 155?
He has it in his back pocket. He was able to do it to Arnold Allen, and he was able to do it to Yair Rodriguez. That's
a little bit different, though.
I think he will keep that, you know, in his back pocket, you know, even just to just complicate defending him a little bit more, you know, just so there is another threat to be worried about. But I don't think he's going to like make a lot of like advancements off of his takedown game or his ground game.
I don't think it's going to be part of the conversation. I think he's going to try to maintain distance. And, you know, Holloway is one of the best boxers in the UFC, pure boxers.
He said it himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, his big advantage comes from strike differential, and he's fantastic at evading damage, whereas Gaethje is effective at dealing out damage, and he takes two to give one, and his one is arguably much more powerful than the two that he took to get there. And so it's going to be interesting, but I think that this is a lot closer on paper than it is going to be in the real world. I think that the size advantage of Gaethje is going to be really, really apparent when they clinch up. Mm-hmm. And I think that Holloway is over time becoming more and more hittable, you know, like in his fight that he had with Volkanovski and the fight that he had with Yair Rodriguez. Those are all examples of good, quick fighters with, you know, fantastic hands that can hit him. But none of those guys are hitting like Gaethje. None of them. I mean, Yair Rodriguez can hit like a truck, but, you know, it's more of a speed combination.
I mean, he hits like a truck for a featherweight.
Mm. Gaethje hits like a truck for a
truck.
Freaking middleweight, I feel like.
Yeah, it's like a truck for a truck. So when I'm thinking about this one, I think Max's of his advantages in this fight are his mobility and his speed. He'll be lighter, he'll be faster, and his footwork is so good. But I think Justin has the tools to address all of those things. His leg kicks can slow Max down. Volk was very successful with the leg kicks. Max eventually adapted. He does that A step in now when he becomes Muay Thai Max. And he has a little more narrow stance. He did this in the second Volk fight. And he like fakes a front kick, like fakes a little teep with that lead leg. And he can come in behind it as a way to kind of like preemptively defend against leg kicks. But I don't know that that's enough. I think Gaethje is absolutely going to land some of them, and that's going to slow him down. Gaethje will do this punch and clutch that he did against Fiziev. But Gaethje's already fought people that are faster than him, and Fiziev was faster. And what he'll do is, you know, as his shifts, as he shifts into an exchange, he'll throw a left hook, and whether or not it hits, he'll just use that thing to latch onto the back of Max's head. And then it doesn't matter how good Max's footwork is, because he's holding them by the scruff of his neck. And from there, he can land like short uppercuts, or like hooks over the side.
And I think that's where you're going to see the dramatic difference. And also look at, you know, how Gaethje's lost. RNC versus Oliveira. Lost to, what was it? How did he lose to Khabib? I mean, he got choked out, right? Or no,
armbar. Khabib took him down and got him in a triangle choke.
What was it? Triangle choke? Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So he typically loses by submission. Holloway's not going to do that to him, I don't think.
Eddie Alvarez kind of wore him down with body work. And Max is good at that. So I think Max's avenue here is his body work early and often. Because I think if Gaethje needs to be able to slow him down, but if Max can start to zap Gaethje's cardio early, I think that's going to be... Yeah, so the body kicks, which he does pretty well. this would be the purpose of those takedowns, if he can try and get Gaethje to the ground, because Gaethje's stand-ups are, or have in the past been, very energy inefficient. He just explodes all the way up. If he can continue,
it's also a three-round fight, though.
Yeah, so that, yeah, if this was a five-round fight, I think I would lean towards Max. Even I think,
really,
I think
you would take Max in a five-round fight.
In a five-round fight, I think.
For the win.
He is durable enough, and I think he is measured enough, and I think he can put on like this grinding, attritive pace and stay away from enough of Gaethje's power over time to win by decision. But
no chance.
I don't think. Yeah. Three rounds is not enough. I just think Gaethje's going to be able to land more damage early. I'm genuinely really worried that this is going to be the fight
big,
that cracks
this
Max's
is a
chin.
Big ask for Holloway. I don't see it. I, you know, a lot of times when I'm thinking about how fights, and I, you know, I'm watching film, I think about what are the ways that you know, Holloway, or what are the ways the other guy can win. There's nothing I can conjure in my mind right now where I can see Max Holloway winning.
Ugh.
It's not going to be on the ground. It's not going to be some lights out strike.
God, that
I think,
hurts to
and
hear.
It's not going
to
be attrition, because Gaethje just hits so much harder, and especially with the leg kicks. I mean, dude, he hurt Khabib with the leg kicks. And I think Khabib came out and said that he's the hardest puncher he's ever faced, or the hardest hitter he's ever faced.
I believe
it was Gaethje. And that's a big ask, especially because we've already seen a preview to this, which was with Dustin Poirier. And Dustin Poirier is good, but really good. But he doesn't hit as hard as Gaethje does. And Gaethje just doesn't stop coming. So I'm taking Gaethje. I think this is going to be a decision win for Gaethje. I don't think he's going to take out Holloway. He's just too tough, too durable. But this is too big of an ask for a guy to come up 10 pounds and take on a guy like Gaethje.
I think so too. I think decision after three. Fight of the night, though.
Fight of the night, for sure. Well, I don't know. I mean, Oliveira, Sarukian could be fight of the night.
Well,
it's not going to be the next one, I don't think.
Yeah.
Weili Zhang taking on Yan Xiaonan. So, fuck. These names kill me. So we'll say Weili, 24-3. She's 34 years old, taking on Xiaonan, who's 18-3, 34. What are the fight? Are the odds on this? So -500 for Weili and +380 for Xiaonan. What are your thoughts
that feels
on that?
Right. I think
that totally
this,
feels right.
This certainly won't get fight of the night, but I could totally see it getting performance of the night.
For one of them.
for one in particular.
For one of them.
So I started from, what can Yan do to Zhang that Amanda Lemos couldn't? Like, Lemos, I think, has a more offensive ground game. I think she hits harder.
She hits real hard.
I think she might not be... I mean, there is a lot of skills that Xiaonan has on the feet, like her... like side kicks and her ability to like snipe from range. She's so fast getting into, in and out. And she's fairly physical for that division. Mm-hmm. Not to say that a Lamosh is not, but they do operate different kinds of striking games. But I just don't think that that means Jeannin has a threat that Whaley doesn't have an answer to.
I agree.
Whaley Zhang is she's the best female fighter in the world, according to me sitting right here. She is so fast. She's so powerful. She is constantly evolving faster than almost anybody else, and especially faster than almost any champion. Mm-hmm. I mean, who else is holding a belt right now and is getting better, as much better, as much faster as she is?
None that I can think of.
I just
Duplessis gotten a hell of a lot better, I feel like.
I don't even know if that's true. Was he always that good? He might have been. I don't understand
him. I've chronically undervalued that guy. Even now, you hear me in the beginning? I forgot that he was champion.
Yeah, you were like, they can fight Adesanya. Yeah. But I don't do that with Zhang Weili. She was a striker when she came in. She was a sidekick. She was a spinning back kick. And then she was kind of like some pot shots from the inside. And now she has just so many tools. In this fight, I see her just trying to close the distance, getting a body lock, and dragging Zhang onto the ground, and it looking like the Carlos Esparza fight all over again.
Physicality.
She's a monster.
Technique and ground game.
Yeah.
Is where I see it. She hits harder. The only way, so Zhang On, she might be faster. But if we look at her record, she's, 3-2 in her last five. She lost to Marina Rodriguez, Carlos Esparza, beat Andrade, beat Mackenzie Dern in a split decision. And, you know, while those are all very good opponents, it doesn't have a resume that reeks of UFC 300 title fight unless there's some external drivers here, which is in this case, and I believe the fact that it's the China versus China first ever like title fight, you know, against two Chinese fighters, which is a massive market for the UFC to tap into. And I think that's why this fight is happening. There's not, you know, maybe, you know, I don't even want to say Rose Namajunas because she's got the two up on Weili. I don't see there really being much of any threat for her right now. And it sure as heck isn't coming from Zhaonan. Not this fight. This is going to be a clinic, I think.
I think Zhang's just going to land some heavy ground and pound. She uses elbows on the ground and in the clinch like I wish every lighter weight fighter would do. When
sure.
you
she
are
throws her whole body into it.
When you are scrawny, you know, if you're the size of Zhaonan Yan and you have, if you're just very thin because you're 115 pounds, put your sharp ass elbow in their face. Like,
sure.
It doesn't matter if there's not as much weight behind it because you got a big bony point. And Weili uses her elbows and her knees like a villain. Like, she is so good with them.
She commits to her strikes.
100%. Sure. I think yep. She controls positions really well. She's got good submissions. The only reason Yan was able to survive against Mackenzie Dern on the ground, she spent a decent amount of time on the ground, but she was purely focused on defending submission attempts. And in that pursuit, she took a lot of ground and pound. But Mackenzie just doesn't have the pop on the ground that Weili does. You can't take that many shots. The same amount of shots that Dern landed, you just can't take that many from Zhang.
Weili's a finisher.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't think we need to go too far into this one just because it is a relatively lopsided fight. You know, they could prove us wrong. Zhaonan could prove us wrong. She's not going to. But my prediction in this is that Weili by TKO via ground and pound before the end of round three.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you do want to look out for something while you're watching this fight, both of them are originally Sanda fighters, which is like a style of Chinese kickboxing. I watched some Sanda fights recently. It looks like a blast. It's only a little bit of grappling, but mostly kickboxing. And it's a lot of focus on catching kicks and like dumping your opponent down or getting a takedown off of caught kicks. So that's kind of a fun little like specific style of kickboxing that they both started at. Watch their kicks, watch their body kicks, see how they respond to kicks from each other. I think that'll be a kind of a fun thing to catch.
I look forward to watching Jeanan's kicks in her next fight. Not this one though, because I think it's like
I think one's gonna get caught and she's gonna.
Yeah, I think one's gonna get caught. All right, and for the final fight of the night, the light heavyweight championship, Alex Pereira, Pereira. We were having that discussion earlier. -130 taking on Jamahal Hill, 12-1, who is sitting at +110. Pereira, 36. I bring it up because I think age is important in these fights. Not as much as the heavyweight and light heavyweight as it is in, you know, lightweight, bantamweight, but still important. Mm-hmm. And Jamahal Hill, 32. What are your thoughts on this fight?
Hill's going to be a lot faster. And he used that to great effect when he fought the last old man.
Don't you feel Hill is another one of those guys that somewhat flies under the radar? You chronically undervalue and underappreciate his skill. I do too.
And
maybe it's that horrible hand tattoo on his shoulder.
The two Mickey Mouse hands on his chest that look like. Am I the only one
that
thinks
so? Like that looks like his kid brother did that when he was like 16 years old.
It's it wouldn't be my first choice of tattoo.
No,
you know, but so Jamahal, what he does,
I'm glad,
and this is why I underestimate him. Is because like he fights in a way that I'm not prepared to watch, because he doesn't fight like a ton of other light heavyweights. Because he fights like a lightweight. Like there's this kind of like new breed of strikers at lightweight that are all starting to fight kind of like Sean O'Malley with the like snappy front kicks and the blitzing in and out and the range finding. And the stance switching and the hands, like they're not fighting with their hands up like high and tight boxer wrestler style anymore.
Sure.
It's a lot more like a freestyle kind of fighting.
Do you think that's going to last?
Well,
it seems like a step back in a way, doesn't it?
It's developed in response to a lot more rigid fighting styles. So I think it will last until somebody comes up with a reliable answer to it. And right now he seems to have a pretty good handle on everybody he's fought. Bar getting his arm broken by Paul Craig and letting
one
it
of the
flop
few UFC
around.
Fights that I don't ever want to go back and watch again.
That's
to be completely candid with you.
Horrific.
It's disgusting. It's a disgusting injury.
He toughed it out too. Like that. Like
I know
he didn't tap. Like
at first, I thought he was ground and pounding, and I was like, "Oh, I was like, he doesn't have much mustard on these things." It's because his elbow is dislocated.
It's so gross. But yeah, he toughed it out. Jamahal Hill is like, did you watch the Glover fight in prep for this? The fourth round after that, where they pour the water on his head and just this like. River of blood pours out of his hair. He's Jamahal Hill's got that dog in him. He's so nasty.
12-1. And I don't, his other fights haven't really been that close either.
Yeah. I think the Thiago Santos one, I think that took a little bit more out of him than I think he wish it did, or took more of him. But
yeah,
he's been, I mean, Johnny Walker, he just lands these brilliant counters. He hits so hard. He moves so fast. He is so athletic in that he carries his large frame around like somebody who is much smaller.
Okay. However, question for you though.
Yes. Go on.
You finish.
I was just gonna start to transition into why he has some bad habits that Alex is gonna exploit. So tell what did you have there?
Okay, so my question is, the elephant in the room is the Achilles injury. Do you know how bad it was?
He tore it. I think he fully.
Okay. So what does that do?
Well, he was doing, I mean, he was in physical therapy for like a year at minimum. He was, you know, couldn't, he was in a boot.
Okay.
He couldn't.
So I can hear my kids upstairs screaming right now. So my apologies. That's why I kind of trailed off there for a second. Okay. So that was my point though. So we have an unknown right now. We have a guy that, you know, had to walk away from the lightweight title.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a boot, not being able to train. He's extremely reliant on speed, does a lot of kicks, has great hands, a lot of distance management. And then he's fighting Alex Pereira. We'll say Alex. Pereira today. Alex. So Alex.
There's no way to
Alex
be right.
Alex is 36. There's no way to be right in any of this shit. He's 36. Now, my question to you. So we have the unknown right now with Jamal Hill on his Achilles injury and how that's going to impact him. And the other thing that we don't know is Alex as good or Alex as good as he has seemed against his last two opponents at light heavyweight. So Jan Blachowicz, like 40 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Split decision win. Jiří Procházka coming off that shoulder injury did not look like the same Jiří Procházka that held the title a couple years ago.
So you're these saying are the that coming off of an extensive injury means that
could
you're not
be a massive problem.
Bed.
Yes.
Well,
that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying, is Alex as good as we think he is because of the fighters that he's fought and the conditions that he fought mm-hmm. him? And is Jamal going to come back and be the same fighter that he was before? Because we've seen what it's done to other fighters like Jiří.
Well, so the reason that was a split decision against Jan was because he was grappled pretty heavily in the first round. My two cats are grappling right now. If you can,
we both have external stimuli going on the moment.
But Jamal's not going to take him down. I think Jamal's not going to take him down because he said he wasn't going to, and I don't think Jamal wants to come across like a bitch. And shoot after he says
that's
he
a good
will.
Game plan.
He said he believes he can beat him on the feet, and he does have the skill to do it, but not the things I'm worried about. When you mentioned his Achilles injury, and I have seen recently, I work for those of you who don't know, when I'm not doing this, my actual real time full job is I work in a physical therapy clinic. And so I see people who have torn Achilles pretty regularly.
We should have led with that.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's where some of this comes from. And one of the things that I never even considered is like that leg atrophies. Like it gets really small, kind of like amusingly small. And you can build that strength back, but it is so hard to put mass back on that. And for a calf kick, mass is padding. So if whatever leg that happened to, if that leg is in front, that's going to hurt a lot worse to get kicked in.
What about confidence in your physical ability after an injury like that? Like, what does that do to the mind? I've seen people where they're never really the same physically after having an Achilles tear. And these are not, you know, premier athletes, but they're regular human beings that they're very careful and cautious moving forward. And a lot of their movements, they won't try out new sports I've seen before. Obviously this is different in a 32-year-old like mega fighter or mega athlete, superstar fighter. But you can't tell me that doesn't play in somewhere in the psyche.
That's gonna and he's he has to have made some adaptation. Like I think that
have to.
It's but he hasn't ever before. I have a stat here.
What do you mean he hasn't ever before? Made an adaptation to the to the style or what?
50. There have been 56 attempted leg kicks on Jamal Hill in his UFC career, and he's absorbed 51 of them. That man does not defend leg kicks. He just takes them. He just gets kicked.
And what leg was the Achilles injury on?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But he says he switches stance.
He might need to.
Right.
Because Poton puts it on you.
Yes. And so Alex stays in the same stance. He pretty much always fights orthodox, but he has fought a lot of southpaws. For this fight, I was reading Blaine Henry's The Fight Library, which is a channel, I guess, on Substack. I don't know if it's called channel. But he has this...
That's deep, dark web.
Yeah, he's got this technical breakdown of Pereira's striking and how he fights against southpaws and orthodox fighters from the same stance. And I think that Jamal has to either be willing to switch constantly or risk getting locked into his whatever stance puts his stronger leg first. Because he has not shown either the ability or the desire to defend leg kicks. I think that's just going to be a really big problem. Unless
what do you think Poton's really good at?
Leg kicks. It's the leg kicks. Leg kicks. That shortcut
leg kicks is set up, and then that thundering left hook.
Yeah, and he times everything so well. He waits until you're shuffling from side to side. He waits until you're retreating from like a combination. Like his first like two kicks in the Jiří Procházka fight, the first two kicks sent Jiří stumbling to the mat. Like he's so accurate. He's so fast. And those leave him ready to throw that left hook. There's a lot of things going against Jamal here.
But if he didn't have the injury, this is a very close fight, in my opinion.
Honestly,
but because of the injury and the fact that Pereira, that's a very interesting stat that you brought up about the absorbed leg kicks.
Yeah, that's
so unless he's willing to check those kicks, which he may or may not be, you can't tell me that Poton's game plan is not going to be just to go out and attack the shit out of that leg over and over again. And then if Hill's not going to be able to get him down to the ground, which, you know, Poton's proven to be a difficult guy.
Yeah, he can scramble back. I mean, like, as long as he can get to the fence. If he can get to a fence, he can eventually get himself up.
Typically, yeah.
The things that I don't love about Alex's stand-up are he relies a lot on his frames with his arms to block punches so that he can like slow a punch down and roll with it. But if you get past or around his frames, he doesn't put a shoulder up in the way like, you know, Poirier might. And he doesn't like duck and roll like Gaethje might. If you get around his frames, he tends to just get hit. And that's how,
especially when he's going out for the kill, like he was against Adesanya
in the first fight, right at the end of the first round, Izzy cracked him. And basically how the second fight ended almost happened in the first. And that was a straight jab, the framing defense that Alex uses is great for rounder punches. But he has to parry if there's straights coming inside. And
like you
so
did with Strickland.
Yeah. Yes. So what Izzy did was he threw a big jab and Alex parried it. And then as his jab gets knocked away, Izzy just grabs onto Alex's wrist and pulls it down and away from pulls it away from Pereira's face, and then his big cross over the top is what rocks him super hard. Mm-hmm. And Jamal can absolutely do that. That's the kind of slick hand fighting and like a really quick dynamic entry that he is so, so good at. Mm-hmm. So messing with those frames, keeping his hands on his hands, pulling those things down in a way, that is a totally viable route to victory for Jamal. I totally think he can make that work.
I agree.
But if you are put hands on hands range, you are also in get kicked in the leg range. So I think.
And Pereira also has really good hands too.
Yeah.
Obviously. And he's fought world-class talent in kickboxing. And I don't think that Hill's going to show him a whole lot that he hasn't seen before. This is not an easy fight to pick. So sometimes when we talk about these fight, we're like, oh, you know, it's, you know, like the Wei Li fight. And the only the caveat to this fight is the Achilles injury. And so I feel like as someone that's predicting a fight, we have to go with the known entity versus the unknown entity. And I think Pereira has the skill set, even without the injury to Jamal Hill, to compete with him, possibly beat him. With the unknown entity, which in this case is the Achilles, I think that we have to, or I have to go with Pereira because of that.
I think that's the right move.
Yeah. You know, and but he's still getting a little older, and still, I don't know how long he's going to last at 205.
Those are older divisions. I mean,
they are, but 36, he doesn't have a lot of mileage on him, I guess, relative to, but he's got a lot of fights. Maybe he does have a lot of mileage on him. I don't know.
That's a problem for that's a problem for future episodes of the Cage Wisdom podcast.
You are damn right.
When our loyal viewers tune in to our analysis for UFC 325.
By the way, I should have like started with this. I think this is really interesting. So I looked up ChatGPT's prediction.
Mm, ooh.
Yeah. So maybe for a future episode when we do it on Instagram, we could have it set up there and, you know, us versus like ChatGPT. But it says Nickel via decision, Oliveira via submission, Gaethje versus TKO, Weylia via decision, and Poton versus via TKO. Actually pretty in line with what we're seeing outside of maybe the Gaethje versus TKO
and Oliveira. Nickel by decision. I don't know if I agree with that one either.
Yeah.
I feel confident that man beats machine here.
I think so too.
You heard it here first. So
of course, we're the ones that it's our decision. So obviously we're going to be a little biased, but you know, I see like how it gets some of those, maybe not the nickel one. I'm curious as to what those inputs needed to be to get that out of it. But yeah, so that is UFC 300 to us. If you want, if you've listened to this, you're probably going to go watch the shorter version. We've got another one on Instagram, and hopefully this time around we'll be going up on YouTube. But we'll have our breakdowns, our predictions there. And then we've got UFC 301 coming up in 2 weeks. And from my understanding, they took all of the talent that should have been on both cards and put it on one card. And the next card, UFC 301, is arguably the worst card
in a while,
in a long time. And we say that about three times a year. This one might have the cake here, but you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I don't even know who's fighting in it, to be honest with you.
Jose Aldo is coming back. Yeah, I think to get the retirement that he deserves, you know,
yep.
Nobody deserves to retire against Merab Dvalishvili at 6,000 feet in Salt Lake City.
No, so I can't wait till that guy comes back.
Bring the King of Rio back.
Yeah. Give him we'll be back in 2 weeks, you know, to break down those fights. But in the meantime, I hope everyone has a great weekend. I hope you enjoy the fights. Buck, always a pleasure. You do an amazing job on your preparation, and it shows every single time we come here. We've been going on pretty strong now for over 2 years, so we're going to see where things take us. So we're making changes on our end. But if we don't talk to you then, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Over and out. Good night, everybody.